Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you joined our program today. Both myself and my co-host here, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself. Come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you've got advisors you work with now or not, or you do things all on your own, we want you to consider this program another place for great information and another place you can call into for a second opinion on anything.
And it second and third, because we don't always agree.
Okay, that is true. We usually agree.
We don't always agree at the outset of until we can actually explain the argument as to our thinking.
But also, Pat, you know, in fairness, financial planning, retirement planning, it is a part science, part art to it.
Because there's people involved in it.
There's people and there's an unknown future. So it's sometimes a balance of a mitigating future risk alongside with the behavioral finance of an individual.
How an individual person will react, or either how they believe they will react, but no one really knows how you'll react until you react.
So we've been doing this program for over 20 years. Hanson McLean's been in existence for roughly 25 years. Been doing this a long time. And we have some clients that have been around a long time.
25 years.
Because we have
from before
several thousand, over 100 employees and team of great certified financial planners and whatnot. So at Hanson McLean, so in the last couple of weeks, I talked to two long-term clients, both with fairly significant sized portfolios. So both both around age 70 at this point. Both around age 70 at this point. Been with us a long time. Both retired. Both could sustain major declines in their accounts if it so happened, because the amount of assets they have compared to their income, they're both in great shape. And neither one of them are overweighted in stocks by any means. They're more probably about 50% in equities by and large.
They might actually, you could make an argument that they might be a little bit underweighted in equities.
Because they don't, so one I talked to, I'm going to call her Judy. I said, Judy, how are you feeling about the markets? Are you nervous about the count at all? And she says, she was being sweet to me. She says, well, a bright young man once told me not to pay attention to the daily fluctuations, just referring to me. It's like, so I don't worry about that stuff at all. We've been on this journey long enough. I'm not worried in the slightest.
And we know you said that long, long time ago because she called you a bright young man.
I was young.
You were young.
And I was brighter then.
Okay,
both. Dense. And this other individual I talked to a couple days ago, I'll call her Sue. I said, Sue, I didn't even have to ask her if the market's making news.
She let you know.
She had said that she was hoping to do some travel this year, but it doesn't feel comfortable doing it with what the markets are doing. And the markets have barely, this really isn't much volatility. I mean, maybe a 10% decline of the broad index, which is happens. I said, this happens, Sue, about once a year. Sue had also been a client for 20 years, done very well, ridden through all the different
things. But she was reacting to it.
Yes. And so the behavioral finance things, and I also realize as a financial advisor, neither one of these people are going to change. And this latter person is going to be like this all the time. And so we had a discussion actually about behavioral finance. It's part of the reason you have these assets. You've always been nervous about the future.
I get it.
You've always been nervous. That's why you've saved well. Now you're retired. So I know I don't have a chance to put any more money back in. That's why I get nervous. We've had this conversation 50 times.
And this will come and go no more than you should actually go on a nicer vacation if the markets are up, that you should not go on one when they're down.
In this conversation, I said, look, if we need to have a, I said, if we have to have this conversation every 3 months, let's have this conversation every 3 months. Because that's a part
because
of
you didn't want to underweight the portfolio in equity. You didn't want to say, okay, we're just going to go to a risk-free asset
because that wouldn't be
good for
her
over the long term.
I think she was maybe 40% in equities. And
it wouldn't be good for her over the long term.
No, it would have been bad. I said the thing I'm protecting against is inflation. She has some longevity in her family.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about inflation long term. That's why we have that.
But that is investor psychology.
And I said, it's funny because I said, look, at Hanson McLean, this is a lot of what we do. And I said, don't feel strange about this. You think of all the people that go to Weight Watchers.
Okay.
Or different smoking cessation programs or whatever it is. They know intellectually, they know the answer.
Yes.
They need some support structure in their life to help them make wise choices for themselves. We all do that.
It's why I go to the gym and do group classes. I don't like working out by myself. I'm not a huge fan of working out, but I'll go do a group class because I kind of need that around me. I need that social interaction. I need to kind of feel like this other person's got going to stay the hour and I'm going to leave early, right? So I know the right thing to do.
Correct. You don't really need someone around you.
No, not at all.
But we're human beings.
That's correct. So you have to actually mitigate your own personality in all sorts of aspects of your life.
That's exactly right. And so when it comes to the reason investing is challenging, it's because our emotions get involved. We start paying attention to the daily news cycle. And
we've got two big drivers. Well, security is the number one driver, but fear and greed are big drivers in people's investment philosophies, and it changes over time. Because when things are doing well, you'll see the
fear
greed,
of missing out.
The fear of missing out, and the greed to get more.
And with a time like this, we see FANG stocks have fallen harder than I mean, seeing these.
What is a FANG stock?
Facebook, Apple, it doesn't.
Netflix.
If you don't know what it is, then it's probably Google. Been helpful for you.
Yes.
So, right? I mean, if you know exactly what it is, I would venture to say you're. Well, I'm not going to put a broad thing.
But
many people who know what that is who are following it are not necessarily going to be helping themselves in their portfolio as a result. But so this volatility we're having right now, very normal.
Normal. In fact, read an article. If you call this the ghost market, last year, 2017, was considered the ghost market. I've never heard this term before. I read it a couple of days ago, the ghost market, because it just slowly kind of out of nowhere.
2017?
Yeah, move forward without much volatility.
I thought it was the Trump bump.
This was the ghost market.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
The ghost of Trump.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway. The important thing is right now, if these markets are making you nervous, if you've got the right kind of allocation, meaning that the stocks that you own are designed to be there for 5+ years, and I'm going to state the real estate that you own is designed to be in place for 5+ years, then don't worry about it. If, as long as you've got assets outside of those to provide your income over the long term, those things have always recovered and gone onto new highs, assuming you're broadly diversified on both ends of those. If, on the other hand, you've got money that you need for property taxes.
Or 2 years from now or 3 years from now.
You might want to make some.
You want to make sure your dollars are allocated for the proper normal market cycles.
Yeah. And if so, then don't worry about it. Yeah. Don't pay attention to the news. And when they act like they're freaked out because of a wide roller coaster, pay no attention. Anyway, let's take some calls here at Hanson McLean. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of a program. Again, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We are in Northern California with Vince. Vince, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Vince. We're great. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I listen to your show and podcast every week, and so I get a lot of great advice. So
I wanted
to share my thoughts where I'm at right now, especially with the market changing the last couple of weeks, and just wanted to get your feedback. So
all right.
I'm 65 years old, married, and I expect to work until I'm 70. Number one goal is to pay off our primary residence, which would be in the next 5 years. a primary residence, and we also have some rental property is worth just a little bit over $1 million. And these two properties are our only form of debt, which is about $490,000. My wife and I, we both have about $195,000 in retirement accounts, of which about $120,000 is in 401ks and then $70,000 in IRA accounts.
So that's each one of you have approximately $195,000?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So the 401k is invested 100% into the Vanguard Target Retirement 2025. And then we also have about $100,000 in cash saved. So, you know, regarding our annual retirement savings, you know, I'm maxing out my 401k at the $25,000 a year. And then we're, you know, adding an additional $20,000 a year in savings. So if all goes as planned, you know, the goal will be to sell our rental property in 5 years and use the equity, our equity from the payoff to pay off our primary residence at retirement. So, you know, that, you know,
Does that calculate in some increase in the value of the rental?
That's actually at the current value of the rental. And I think I had, scheduled in about 3 to 4% annual increase.
And is the rental are you cash flow positive on the rental now?
Yes. Yeah. It's about a 6 to 7% return on investment. And over the next 5 years, the actual income that we receive is offset by the depreciation.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know,
what's the question for us?
So I guess the question is, you know, I've heard, especially in the last couple of weeks, and I know everybody's situation is different depending on their position with their retirement accounts, but does this sound like the right thing for us to do in terms of, you know, taking the equity out of the rental property in 5 years and then paying off our primary residence so we're you know, literally debt-free and just really looking at the minimum required distribution?
How much do you make a year now?
Our adjusted gross income is probably about $240,000 a year.
And will you have a pension of any sort?
No, it's just the retirement accounts that I have here.
And will your wife have a pension of any sort?
No, she'll be relying upon the distribution of these as well. She's a little bit younger than me, so she probably would retire in maybe 8 years.
I guess the stock market allocation doesn't concern me. My quick question mark in my head is, if this rental you're planning on selling in 5 years to pay off the house, so the house can be paid off in 5 years, why don't you just sell it today?
Because it's got the yield of 6% on it, and he's using depreciation. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, we're profiting about $10,000 a year.
So here's the answer to the question there. I don't know whether I'd sell it in 5 years or not.
What do you owe on your primary residence?
About $355,000. And in 5 years, that would be just slightly under $200,000.
Well,
we have a 15-year mortgage, which is about, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
Over 10 years.
So based on your income of $240,000 a year, your standard of living, this is just rough looking at that. If you pay off that rental, the house, you most certainly should do that. So you get rid of that debt, and it actually would make the overall portfolio a little bit more conservative. Your account balances of $390,000 in your IRAs and 401ks. In 5 years at the current rate would probably, you know, at a decent rate increase and the maximum contribution of $25,000 a year to those should put you at about 650 to 5%, yeah. 30,000. What are you paying on your mortgage?
We're paying, it's $4,000 a month.
$48,000. Yeah. And your social security is $2,700.
If I were in your situation, one of the challenges I see is that you've got a strategy that's going to say in 5 years you're going to pull a trigger You've got a 5-year hold on that rental property, essentially. And for me, a 5-year hold on real estate stocks is a little short for me.
Yeah, maybe. So you're thinking, why wouldn't you just do it today and call it a day?
My concern is, what happens if you're about to retire and the markets, you can't. I mean, you know what it's worth today, and if your goal is to,
if you're trying to mitigate risk and you can do it today, then you should probably do it today. Is that the point, Scott?
Yeah, and then take that equity, pay down that mortgage
right now.
You're not getting any tax benefits from the rental because your income's too high.
Right. It kind of leads to the second part of my question is, you know, I moved the target retirement fund, you know, $120,000 to the 2015 fund, which really flipped my equity bond.
Okay.
65 bonds and 35 equities, just because in the last few weeks, what I've seen going on with the market and just, you know, at my age, I've seen the market flip a few times.
Vince,
you're
making an argument as to why you should actually sell that rental and pay down the house. Because while you're making the portfolios more conservative in the market, which you shouldn't be, because at age 70, when you go to retire, you still have a life expectancy of 16 years, and your wife is 8 years younger than you. So hers is 28 years, being a female. You're addressing risk on one part of the portfolio, which is what shows up on a statement with numbers, and you're ignoring the other part of the portfolio, which has
debt on it,
which is the debt and the value of the rental property. So in order to make this all work right, I agree with Scott. I would look at selling the house now, paying down the rent, paying down the primary mortgage. The primary mortgage is what's going to stop you from actually retiring comfortably.
$4,000 a month.
At $4,000 a month. That's the equivalent of about pre-tax dollars of about $60,000 a year coming in. And then you look at your Social Security benefits of $2,700 a month approximately. And then you look at your portfolio.
A little higher than that if you wait till 70.
And then you look
at it's actually about 3,800.
Age 70,
yeah.
Oh, 38.
Okay.
Plus my wife.
Yep. Well, yeah. So I think you should sit down and visit with a financial advisor. I think that you've underallocated equities in your portfolio, moving it to the 2015 target date. And you got to think about, it's not just your retirement, it's both of you, and the age difference between you and your wife is extremely relevant in this situation.
Yeah, because that's my concern, is looking over the next 5 years. I mean, I look to put another $200,000 towards my retirement accounts over the next 5 years. So, you know, that's the other question, is where do I put this $200,000? Do I,
your 401k?
You're saying I should look more long term. Yeah.
The
401k and cash.
I mean, yeah. The day you're going to retire, you're not spending it all. So you're a life. I mean, your time horizon is actually very long with your money.
So you're giving us conflicting, you're conflicted because one of your assets you're actually planning on 5 years and you're not mitigating the risk, and the other one you're over mitigating the risk on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty.
Interesting.
More food for thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Sit down with a qualified advisor.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Vince.
I appreciate it.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Let's continue with calls. And really, the calls can be on any sort of financial issue. It can be about the markets, or it can be about retirement, or it can be about estate planning or taxes. To join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Sacramento with Tony. Tony, you're with Hanson McLean.
Well, I don't know. I need some professional advice because I am 63 and about. I would love to retire eventually, and I'm about $63,000 in debt with some debt that I acquired by trying to help the family out, and a student loan that just doesn't go away.
Whose student loan?
Mine. Hey, I have about 4 AS degrees, got me a job for the state of California, but I was on income-based repayment plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the furloughs and, you know, we were furloughed, et cetera. And that did meet their criteria, but interest built up over a period of time. And there's about $1,600 worth of accrued interest.
Okay, so let's break this. I
am no expert on the student loan repayment programs, but I've been reading some articles and hearing that, like, the vast majority of people who on this plan think they're going to have their loans forgiven, there's some technicality and it's not being forgiven. So, that's what's happened to you, Tony?
Yes. Yeah. There's a couple of technicalities. If I had consolidated it and made them direct loans about 9 years ago, working for the government, it would be one more year and they would be forgiven. But that's not the case. And I kind of expected to pay the bill. I signed the papers, but there are technicalities, and you have to read all print.
Well, let's break down who you owe the money to. So this is $63,000. Who is the $63,000? Is that include the student loans or exclude the student loans?
No, it's about it's probably about $30,000. $10,000 for personal loan because helping family out,
all right.
And $20,000. Credit cards helping family out,
okay.
And the rest is the student loan. It's broken into the Department of Education.
Got it. So you got $33,000 in student loans,
and you've got 9 years with the state.
Yes.
So one more year, you'll vest, or you vested today?
No. I'm vested
okay.
In the state. It's just that it will not be forgiven because at this time.
All right.
I'm just wondering about pension and medical.
The state, one more year, I will be vested for the pension and medical. Yes.
Yes.
One more year.
All right. And how much do you make?
About $62,000 a year.
You married?
Yes.
Does your wife work?
She doesn't bring in a wage, but I won't say she doesn't work. She
okay.
Puts up with me and does the housework.
And do you have children at home?
No.
Okay. And do you own a home?
No.
You rent.
One of the problems. We missed it.
Got it.
A few times.
Can your wife work?
Probably not.
Okay.
Retirement's a long way off.
Yes.
I'm just, again, being brutally honest.
Probably 12 years.
Well, I am told to not retire in debt. But I may retire from the state and find something else.
That would be a mistake.
Well, not necessarily.
Okay. Yeah, it would be a mistake.
From a financial standpoint, yes.
He called us about numbers.
Okay, but I'm just.
If
you don't like your job in the state, then move to a different job in the state.
Yeah, that's true.
Or go work for a municipality, but we want to bridge this PERS pension.
And you're paying into Social Security as well, are you not?
Yes.
Okay, that's good, because you don't want a job that's don't work for any agency that doesn't participate because
in Social Security.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, don't at this point.
So
you need your Social Security.
So happens is the way your pension is structured, it actually favors an older employee. Versus a younger employee.
Yeah, because he'll be vested in 1 year from
and
now.
And then that, if you look at the grid age, and you're probably at 2% of wage or 2.5%
of
wage.
One and a half.
I seem to have made some sort of mark or a benchmark there, because when you're 63, that's the top of your percentage or something like that. So when you're younger than that,
there's no age 2%. Discount.
Yeah. So. The reality is that defined benefit pension plan and your Social Security that you're going to receive is going to be the most important part of your retirement, right?
Right.
So the credit cards and the personal loans, you could file for bankruptcy. It's not going to discharge most of those, if not all of the students' loans will not be discharged in bankruptcy, but the credit cards and the personal loans will.
Trying not to do that.
I don't think that's a great option. So you just need to put together a plan to whittle those down, and you want to stay working at the state of California as long as you possibly can. That's the reality. And if your wife can get a job, any job, that would help.
Yeah. I mean, really, Tony. And, you know, also, it's like, and I don't know what the situation was with family members, but.
Just stop it. It's hard.
The reality is there'll be a point in your life as you age where work's not going to be an option for you, most likely. And, I mean, I think the reason we're concerned that you continue to work and work with the state, we're going to have a pension, is our concern. Suddenly, let's have this stop today. How do we
replace that income?
How do we pay the rent and put food over the table? So, Tony, I think you're going to have to continue working for a number of years. Sorry about that. Appreciate the call. Well, again, we have to take a short break to kind of, because that's what those radio stations make us do, frankly.
Yes, it's the economics behind the free radio.
And I find it interesting, the radio stations now, they advertise the benefits of radio. Have you heard some of those ads?
Yes.
Yes. They know that it's things are changing.
Oh.
And it's their...
Every old line media company is. Every old line media company is changing.
Yeah.
Every.
And as well, every other industry
is... If they're not changing now, they will be soon.
Yeah. All right. We're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking with us on this Saturday or listen to a podcast. And I think actually, last I looked, I think we have more podcast listeners than we have radio listeners.
I have been consuming a tremendous amount of new podcasts lately.
Really?
Yeah, just partly because over the Thanksgiving holidays, I spent time with...
Your family.
My family.
So you'd have your earbuds in. So
No.
Hey, Uncle Pat. You're just staring at him. You listen to your favorite podcast.
All you have to say is I'm proud of you, and then you just move on to the next one. The nieces and nephews eat that stuff up.
I'm really proud of you.
Actually, they listen to our podcast.
As you're listening to some podcast.
You just stare at them. Proud of you.
Okay.
No, they recommended a lot of, over the Thanksgiving holiday, they had recommended a lot of, we had conversations, and then over the last couple of weeks, I've been getting little texts like, try this one or try this one from my nieces and nephews. So.
Are they stuff that middle-aged guys enjoy?
They're a lot of political in nature and some science in nature and some economic in nature. So.
I like the
I come from a fairly large family, so there's lots of input.
I subscribe to TED. They've got TED Radio and the TED and different TED Talks, and there's usually something. If I'm like on a long drive, I try to schedule a few for my drive. But I tend to enjoy those quite a bit, and I don't know.
Yeah. And, well, that's why if you listen to this show at all, just maybe you should subscribe to our podcast.
It will be interesting to see. And look, we broadcast in our radio programs, and we are grateful for our partners. They've been great long-term partners, and we hope for their sake that this medium continues.
But they're moving to podcast, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Every terrestrial radio company
in the middle of...
Yeah, they're trying to manage this transition a little bit better than they think that the newspapers have managed the digital transition, which is to get in front of themselves.
And it's just, you talk about the newspapers. You know what has been an interesting thing is just how, look, we're in a time of some market volatility. And when we talk about sticking to the long term, that assumes you have a diversified portfolio.
100%. Now, it doesn't mean, when we say stay for the long term, it doesn't mean go down with a ship because
one
individual company or even a sector that falls out of favor for many, many years or is grossly overpriced.
I mean, one of the things that here at Hanson McLean, we've been doing this so long, working with people and through enough market cycles that we've seen companies change.
No.
I was with someone recently that retired from, and she'd reminded me where she retired from. She retired from Lucent right at the top of the market. And we had to diversify from Lucent. Lucid went from, I forget exactly,
it was,
but
fell
it was about
by 80 to 90. Yeah, yeah, 80 to 90.
Without recovering, by the way.
Yes, never came back.
Yeah,
never
so
came
although
back.
Amazon fell like 90%, it's clearly a different kind of business. It was a tiny company back then.
I remember a client, actually, when I diversified their portfolio, they had 90% of their portfolio in Lucid stock. When they retired, I diversified out of that. And for a year, they
beat you up over it.
Beat me up over what a bad decision that was made.
Lucid goes up. By the way.
But 20 years later, they're thankful. And it wasn't that we knew something was going to go wrong with Lucid. It's just that we know a diversified portfolio is a risk mitigation tool.
I tell you what. You look at Northern California fires. Okay, first of all, a year and a half ago, whatever it was, they had fires in Santa Rosa. It looked like the Northern California utility was partially to blame. Their stock dropped, PG&E stock dropped, about 50%. 40%, if my recollection is correct. It fell dramatically, right? Boom.
Yes.
Then the fires that happened, the campfire that happened up in Paradise, California, the stock fell another like 60%. So PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, their stock went from 70 some odd to low 20s. It actually dipped below 20 for a while. Now,
this was years ago, you would have called this a widow and orphan stock.
And I was having a conversation with someone recently about the importance of diversification and use that and said how the stock went down. He says, well, yeah, you certainly wouldn't want to sell it now when things are down. And I said,
why?
I said, don't confuse the broad stock market with an individual company.
Because it doesn't mean that stock needs to come back up.
Who knows what's going to happen with it?
Well, I have some theories, but it's not appropriate for radio.
But, you know, I mean,
radio?
The fact is,
look at GE. Right? Look at GE. Should you have sold it when it was down in 3 years ago?
And I guarantee you, there are people listening to us, Pat, that have... Well, they had a high percentage in GE because the stock price has fallen so much, it's not going to... But PG&E, I guarantee there are people listening that are cringing right now because they had too much in one particular company. And it boggles my mind why people in this day and age still, it's so easy to diversify.
But your point being is this. When we say in for the long run...
That's the broad market.
That's the broad market. And it means an appropriate portfolio for your risk tolerance.
Yes.
An appropriate, and when do you design the appropriate portfolio? When do you know whether it was an appropriate portfolio for your risk tolerance? On the downside.
Yeah.
Because the upside takes care of itself.
Yeah. And this might be a good test for you right now.
Yes. Might be.
Who knows? This might just be the start of something much more major, or it might be a blip that's going to pass quickly.
I know. Nobody even knows. In my own family, my wife's risk tolerance is much different than my own. So I actually get comments sometimes about our portfolio.
That's really funny.
It is.
All right. Let's, if you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join us. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's head to Texas and talk with Virginia. Virginia, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning.
Hi, Virginia.
I'll get right to it. My question is, what is the easiest or the best way to know what you're truly paying when you have someone manage your money, specifically retirement funds?
Well,
you know what? This should be an easy answer, shouldn't it, Virginia? I mean, one would think.
Well, you would think.
Yes.
Well, and you could ask it in two ways, right? What's the best way to know the dollar amount? But the dollar amount isn't as important as the percentage relative to what you would be paying someone else.
But the challenge is, Virginia's question, she might have bought some product from somebody that paid a commission.
Well, but Scott, what do you care whether it actually... So I guess the question is...
What is your...
What particular product are you talking about? Because annuities, it's really difficult to... Well, it isn't... What the person that sold it to you is ultimately getting paid is almost impossible for you to figure out. What you're paying the company, you can figure out if you do enough digging. So what's your portfolio look like? And we'll answer that specific question. Or if that matters, or if this is a theoretical question, I'm not sure. But it's a great question.
ETFs.
Okay.
My retirement account consists of ETFs.
Oh, okay. Then it should be really easy for you.
And then are you using an advisor?
Yes.
And your advisor charges a fee on top of that.
That's correct.
Do you know what that fee is?
Yes.
And what is that fee?
He's charging me, as he likes to say, 50 basis points.
Okay, so 0.5% how big is the portfolio, approximately?
I'm not comfortable.
Okay. So
50, as he likes to say, 50. So he's using industry jargon. So that's 0.5%.
Right.
He's charging you 0.5%.
Yeah, exactly.
For the rest of the listeners, a basis point is 0.01%. So if you have 100 basis points,
1%.
It's 1%. If you have 50 right. basis points, it's 0.5% for the rest of the listeners.
And then sometimes they call them bips instead of basis points.
So that actually, depending upon, if it's a large portfolio, that's actually a great price. Or can be a great price,
yes.
depending upon the value
well,
that they're
if it's
adding.
If it's a small portfolio, it's a screaming deal. If it's $50 million,
you're probably being overcharged.
Yeah, depending on what other services you're getting.
So inside of the ETFs, you can actually just go online.
But they're so cheap nowadays.
Yeah.
It's
Inside of the exchange-traded funds, you can actually go online and actually Google the name or the symbol of the fund and expense ratio, and it will actually give you the expense ratio on each one of
those. And all those mutual fund firms, it's a race to the bottom on fees. So it's very cost competitive.
So give us the name of one of the ETFs.
Oh, well, gosh, I don't have anything off the top of my head.
What also?
But here's the thing.
Okay.
I mean, that's a pain in the patootie.
Oh, yeah, but he...
What is?
He or she, your advisor, could
that's the thing. Having to look up every single one of those, because this is what I'm having to do. Okay, he sends me a quarterly statement that tells me what he's charging me.
Okay.
Cool. Fine. It's on hard paper, though. It's not something electronic.
Okay.
Okay, now I have to go and see all the trades that have been made. I have to see the bought, and I have to see the sold. That's another pain in the patootie because that information is electronic, except for that I can't download that information.
And does he charge you for every trade? Virginia, does he charge you every time?
The custodian probably does. Wherever it's housed.
The brokerage house does.
Okay.
Yeah.
The brokerage house charger.
The custodian.
Yes.
Okay.
And then you have to take into account, like you were saying, for each ETF, because there is an expense for buying or having that ETF. So all of those, none of that information I can have access to. I mean, it's all over the place. And that's a pain.
Well, actually, so you know what you know what, Virginia, that isn't, all of that is real.
Well, sure.
All of that is real. And he can provide you that. But I think the real question is that you're not seeing enough value in the relationship.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, something. I think it goes deeper than that.
That's what I'm kind of, we're both looking at each other like.
That's the thing. I asked him for it. Because, I mean, let's just say that you're running a business.
Uh-huh.
One of the things you want to know how much money's coming in, you want to know how much money's going out.
Okay.
I don't know that, and I didn't tell him that. So I just said, well, I kind of like to know how much, total money is being spent and how much money you're making for me.
Okay.
A simple sheet.
Got
but I'm not. He's like, well, all the information is available. You could always go and get it.
Well, that shouldn't be hard for him. That should not.
Well, Scott, she is paying. I assume the portfolio is less than $1 million.
Well, no.
No, it's not.
Oh, good.
I would
okay.
say no. That's why it's 50. That's why it's half.
50 bit. If 50 bit, she'd think. Okay.
Yeah.
So your advisor should be able to provide that for you.
I know he should.
Just say, give it to me. Tell me what is.
Tell me last quarter what I paid in ticket charges on my trades, and what is give me the average underlying expense ratios of the ETFs. So some are going to be, I'm going to use basis points because you know the term now and you brought it. Some are going to be as low as 4 or 6 basis points, and some might be as high as 15 basis points, depending on some international or whatnot. So there'll be different
But it's not a hard. It's not a hard thing for them to do. It's a 10-minute. They build a spreadsheet and boom, just plug the numbers in every quarter. It's not hard.
Then I guess my next question is, I didn't think it would be hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the next question is, I did ask for it. He told me I need to go and get it myself.
Well, then you need to decide what Virginia. You decide what to do.
As Pat said, there's something broken in the relationship.
Yeah. Either he doesn't want to continue to service you as a client, which may be the case. Who knows, right? Or he's just not willing to do that. But you decide whether you want to continue the relationship.
Yeah. You're in charge. It's your money.
Yeah. You don't like him, fire him, you know?
No, really?
No.
Well, I understand. I do like him. It's just that this one thing asked him for and he didn't give it to
me. Well, you just say to him, this is really bothering me. I like you a lot, but I need to understand this because it bothers me. And he'll say.
And so here's the question I as someone who's been an advisor for almost 30 years, with lots of different types of clients, there are some clients that they need to know all the information to feel comfortable with their decision, right? So they need to get deep in the weeds on everything, like this sort of stuff. They get all that, their questions answered, they're good to go. Then there's those that...
They want to second guess
every
decision and make you...
Somehow justify why you chose this ETF over that ETF.
Right.
Those usually aren't the best. Those relationships don't work for either party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many advisors have you had in the last 10 years?
Two.
How many advisors have you had in the last 20 years?
Ooh, last 20 years? Well, right now my brain is healing. So that's the only reason why I am hiring someone is until my brain has completely healed. You know, eventually I just want to go back to doing it myself.
Oh, got it.
No one's made more money for me than me.
Got it. Well, and that oftentimes it's hard to compare those because of different market cycles and when you're doing it versus someone else's and what their returns are.
If I was in your situation, I wouldn't like the answer you got either.
That's right. And so just go back to him and say.
I would not like it either. Come on.
Yeah.
I want to know exactly, if we're going to continue working together, I want to know exactly last quarter what I paid in transaction charges and give me my average expense ratio for the ETFs. He should be able to.
Yeah.
That's a simple, that's 5 minutes
calculation. Just push him on it. And if he doesn't do it, Virginia, then fire.
Okay.
All righty.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
That's what I need to know.
All right.
Thanks. Thank you.
Glad
Thanks.
You called. wish you well.
But Scott, it's not normal. But she's got a large enough account that there should be some accommodation.
Yeah. And look, if you have a fee-based advisor, they have a fiduciary responsibility to put your interest ahead of their own. So by that legal requirement, they should be looking for the brokerage firm that's going to provide overall best execution.
And then the lowest...
Ticket charge is one part of it.
Pricing.
And oftentimes now, a lot of these big firms have their own ETFs they create. Charles Schwab has their own ETFs they create. Vanguard has, they all have their own ETFs that they can create. And sometimes it's less expensive for an advisor to use
the exchange traded funds offered by
that one particular brokerage house. And so you'll see,
Scott, for people listening to the call, they have a $100,000 account and they want all this customization done by the advisor.
For 0.5%.
For 0.5%. Not going to happen.
Yeah. I think she had quite a larger.
I couldn't figure that out, obviously.
No. But look, and the relationship needs to work for both parties, right?
It is a business relationship
and
on both sides.
When that trust is not there, when that trust somehow is broken, it doesn't work for either party. No one's going to have success. Yeah. And there are times, clearly, when it makes sense to move on and go find another advisor. So to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2.
So let me talk a little bit why I asked Hanson. How many advisors she had in the last 20 years or 10 years, right? Because sometimes it's not the advisor.
No, I understand. I
for the rest of the listeners, sometimes it's the client. We all know people in our lives that regardless of what happens, they're not going to be happy.
Not saying that it was necessary to her, but
not to her, absolutely not to her. But there are certain situations where you know someone or work someone or with someone or you know have a relative that regardless of the outcome, you know, they're not going to be happy.
Look, at Hanson McLane.
Like, if you gave them a sucker, they'd complain about the flavor.
At Hanson McLane, we've got over 6,000 families that we serve, their companies here. And so we have a lot of people come, first-time clients come in. Come in for free consultations. Come in for free consultation. We have offices throughout Northern California and offices in Colorado and offices in Cincinnati. And we have clients in every state and overseas for that matter as well. So it's very common to I was till today's, not on the weekend, but during the week, every day, there's going to be someone who's coming into our firm for the first time to see how we might be of service to them. When we talk to somebody, and they've had four advisors in the last 10 years, that's usually a signal that it's probably not the advisor.
It might not be the advisor.
Right. And frankly, to be totally transparent, for us as a firm, we think, this may not be the right fit for us here.
Yeah.
Because if someone comes in, we're both evaluating. Because we need, that trust needs to be.
And we want clients to stay with us forever. We want them to
absolutely.
Be happy.
Of course. And our economic structure is aligned such that every January, our number one interest is is preserving our clients.
Our existing clients.
Oh, it has to be. That's where our revenue comes from.
Yeah. So,
all right. To join Hanson McLane's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Mark in Sacramento. Mark, you're with Hanson McLane.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. What can we do for you?
Yeah, so I have a big general question that I've been trying to do some research on or Googling. And I think the biggest question I have for this call is, you know, am I in the right place for my retirement as far as what's funded into my Roth IRAs and my 401k?
All right. Do you want us to ask questions or do you want to give us your scenario and we'll do our best over this?
Yeah, I'll give you guys my scenario.
Okay.
And I'll just drop the numbers as well. You know, I just turned 30 earlier this year. My wife is 29.
Why'd you wait so long to start planning for retirement?
He's joking.
Yeah, I know. And so the biggest question that my wife always repeatedly asks me is whether or not we're set for retirement, what we got is really going to set us forward. And so, you know, I keep telling myself, I think we're in a good place. We're saving the right amount. But
what are you saving?
I don't know.
As a percentage of your income?
So, we're saving both 8% of our income.
Okay.
And I make $150,000 salary.
And what's your wife make?
She's supposed to make 58, but she actually works part time.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's not making as much.
So what does she make?
I would say this year, I would say she's probably making somewhere 20, 30 this year.
Okay.
And she just started doing
Do you own a home?
Yeah, we own a home.
And what's the value of the home?
About 500 something right now.
And what do you owe on it?
We owe 340.
And what's the interest rate?
Yeah. 3.75.
And do you owe anyone else any money? Do you owe money on cars, credit cards?
Not really. We pay our credit cards anyway. Right. Cars, we do have a car. It's a $706 payment.
Okay. So here's, I'll walk you through this and then I'll recommend a book to you. You need to save 15% of your pay.
Yep, that's exactly the number I was thinking.
15%.
In the old days, it was 10.
You need to save 15% of your pay, both of you.
And by the way, you can't take 8. You said you were both saving 8. You can't take those and add them together and say we're saving 16.
You're only saving 8% of pay. You need to save 15% of pay, so you need almost double that.
If you do 15% of your pay, as far as retirement, being 30 years old, you'd have no worries.
Yeah, and... you need to make sure you have term life insurance on the both of you for, you know, 3 or 4 times annual income. And if you have children, it needs to be probably 8 to 10 times annual income. You need to not buy cars on credit. You need to pay cash for cars. You need to make sure that you don't view your house as a piggy bank. And you need to probably buy some disability insurance through your employer if it is offered to you for both you and your wife. you need to have your portfolio 100% equities, at least for this stage in your life. So 100% in stocks.
Yeah, you have 30 plus years.
And you want
before you're going to retire.
And you want to read the book, The Richest Man in Babylon.
It's classic.
Right? Read the book, The Richest Man.
Yeah, it's an old book. I don't know how many years ago it was written.
So what we're doing here is change your mind, change your world. Change your mind, change your world. And what you're doing for retirement is mediocre, better than most, but mediocre as to where you should be. And by reading a book like The Richest Man in Babylon, or what's the one, The Barber?
The Wealthy Barber?
The Wealthy Barber. Both of those books are pretty much the same concept.
Because they don't talk about why an ETF is better than a no load. That's irrelevant.
Right. What they talk about is why you do it and how do you develop the discipline to save for retirement. So do those things that we talked about, which is one, start learning how to pay cash for cars, which might mean you're buying a used car or a 3 or 4 year
Although,
old car.
Although, Pat, I lease cars.
Scott, you can lease cars because you'll be able to retire comfortably. You did not lease a car when you were 30 years of age, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay. That is...
I didn't buy a new car until I was in my 30s.
You were... This is a... You live in a different world than you. When you were 30, you didn't live. No, you true. Lived.
Okay.
Yeah. But you saved 15%.
Yes, yes, yes.
From the very beginning, and you paid cash for your cars.
Yes. I didn't when I was 24. I had no money. Bought a used car.
But he's
car
got
and had
money.
Finance.
He's got $180,000 a year income. You've got it. The hard part is done for you, Mark, which is you make the money. That's the hard part, by the way.
That is. Figuring out how to get your career and your skills.
Yeah, and your skill and get to $150,000 at age 30. God bless you. Congratulations. You've done great.
In Sacramento, not in San Jose.
So you did the hard part. The easy part is just the discipline to do it. So read those two books, The Wealthy Barber, Richest Man in Babylon. Increase your equity exposure to 100%, 15% in both of them. Make sure you got the right life insurance. Yeah.
And
so
I'd have it all go right into the 401k.
Every dime of it.
And if you want to have some as a Roth, as kind of diversity.
Do it in the 401k.
The 401k because it's just simple.
So appreciate the call.
No reason to go outside of that. Outside of the 401k. So good luck, Mark. We appreciate you joining us this week. And before we take, we're almost out of time. Before we're done here, Pat and I, this is the second airing of, the second taping we've done on our online show called The Five. And The Five is basically, we tackle five topics and have a spirited debate for 5 minutes on each topic. So on this episode of The Five, you'll learn about the retirement risk. That's too easy to forget. The trouble with tax avoidance, the truth about common retirement knowledge, and more. So, again, it's 5 minutes on each topic, five topics. It's called The Five. 25 minutes of your life. I think you'll learn a lot. If you want to grow in your understanding of finances, understanding of retirement, that's the place to go. HansonMcLean.com is the website. At HansonMcLean.com, you'll find The Five right there, and you could watch it. We're out of time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.